This is the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be talking today about a movie we did yesterday, talking about the Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I am pleased to say that there are people all over America streaming into theaters to see that film. And if you missed the discussion yesterday, don't worry. We're going to pick up a discussion on the Narnia theme in coming days, doing a comparison between C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia and Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials. And we're really going to be looking at the clash of worldviews there. That in a few days. Today, we're going to be looking at another movie. Let's just say a very different movie. Annie Proulx's short story, Brokeback Mountain, has been made into a major motion picture. Now, you may not be able to see it today, even though it's released the same day as The Chronicles of Narnia. Because even as The Chronicles is opening on 3,000 screens across America, Brokeback Mountain is opening in New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. At least for now. It stars Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal. And the big issue here is the fact that this movie is about a homosexual romantic relationship between two sheepherders. And what we're going to be talking about today is the main theme of this movie. Is America ready to celebrate a romantic relationship between two men? And to celebrate this as the kind of love that that the rest of us should seek to emulate. Now, let me just tell you right up front. And just a word of warning, when we get to the major portion of the program today and we get to the theme we're going to discuss, there are some issues there that that are very serious. And they are inherently dealing with the sin of homosexuality. And we're going to talk about them honestly. I think this is something we ought to talk about because I guarantee you, if you look across the cable news networks and the headlines and the entertainment magazines, you're going to see this is a big story. First of all, a review of issues in the news. We've been talking about communist China and how this Chinese government has been in the business of marketing the organs of executed prisoners. And all the while, even though we have known that's been going on, the communist government has denied it. But now China has broken its silence to admit for the first time that the organs of executed prisoners are sold to foreigners for transplant. The Times of London releases this story based upon an interview given by Mr. Huang Jifu, the deputy health minister of China. The minister acknowledged that the practice is widespread, and he promised to clean up the trade. In other words, to create some additional guidelines to tighten the rules for the sale of organs taken from executed prisoners. Now, let's just put on a little pause here for a moment. Let's deal with this question right in terms of its moral importance. We're talking about a trade for a price in organs for transplant that are taken out of executed prisoners. Now, the Chinese government says this, it's not completely without guidelines. Either the condemned prisoner or the family must give permission. Now, frankly, they've been denying that the practice per se has been going on, so I have absolutely no confidence in even those guidelines. But let's just say even so. What if that were true? It still would be an inherently immoral act to profit from the sale of organs taken out of executed prisoners. Just imagine what kind of profit motive the regime will now have for executing prisoners. Now, the traditional means of execution in mainland China has been with a gunshot to the head. And by definition, that leaves other organs available for transplant. An Israeli newspaper just in recent weeks reported that dozens of people have been flocking to China each month for cheap transplants. One Israeli man said, "If I had never had my kidney transplant in China, I would already be dead. A Chinese sentenced to death saved my life." According to the Times, almost all of the organs harvested from dead bodies in China come from those of executed prisoners because of the residual belief in Eastern philosophy, Confucianism, and Buddhism that holds that it is wrong to take bodies from ancestors. So it looks like, given the cultural realities there, executed prisoners become the readily available option for obtaining organs for transplant. According to the Times, no official figures are available for the number of executions in China. Legal experts say this is partly because the authorities have resisted compiling a total. However, Amnesty International suggests that more people are executed in China than in the rest of the world combined and estimates the total to about 3,400 each year, but it could be as many as 6,000 or more. That represents a lot of organs for sale. Now, this raises another very interesting point, and we may take this up in an upcoming program as a major topic for our discussion. There are civil libertarians in America. You could call this the hard libertarian wing that is arguing that it ought to be legal in this country to sell one's organs. You have two kidneys, you only need one. Well, you could potentially sell one of your kidneys to someone else for a profit. And there are those who are arguing, look, it's your body, it ought to be your right. You know, this assumes that this kind of personal autonomy that is at the very basis of this radical libertarianism is the only moral principle of significance. I think it's an artificial principle in the first place, and when you actually talk about profiting from selling your own organs, you've reached the point of, you would think, a moral impasse. I think it's a good topic for us to take up at another time. We've been following this issue of the legalization of civil unions in Great Britain. It happened this week, and within about 15 days it will happen in Scotland, soon also in Wales and in Northern Ireland, so that in all of the United Kingdom there will be basically, relationships that are the equivalent of marriage formalized through these civil unions for homosexual partners. But there's something very interesting going on here, and it tells you something about the difference between the United Kingdom and the United States. One of the very first homosexual unions to be celebrated there in Great Britain is between Michael Cashman, who is a member of the European Parliament, and an actor who is also marrying his boyfriend, or at least entering into a civil union. But what's interesting is that there are major British political figures who are attending the ceremony. These include Sherry Blair, the Prime Minister's wife, Lord Neil Kinnock, a former Labour politician and mayor of London, along with Margaret Beckett, the Environment Secretary, and Lord Whitty, the former General Secretary of the Labour Party. The Civil Partnership Act came into force this week, and other celebrities including Elton John and George Michael are also planning to have very well-publicized unions. Again, folks, this just goes to the normalization of homosexuality within the culture. The formation of these civil unions as the equivalent of marriage presents a picture to the society of the fact that this sexual and relational context is simply normal. And is to be accepted as such, accorded all the same rights as marriage, just without the word. And, of course, adding to this sense of normalization is the fact that there are major political figures who will be attending these ceremonies. And I think it's interesting to note that, at least in the United States, it's hard to believe that a politician of this stature would yet go to the political risk to attend a ceremony such as this. But it's probably only a short time before that picture is very different. Earlier this year, the nation was torn apart by controversy over Terri Schiavo. The woman who was in a diminished brain capacity and had diminished consciousness, whose feeding tube was removed at the insistence of her husband, Michael Schiavo. It was a long and extended and tortuous controversy that ended in greater tragedy. Terri Schiavo died in the first quarter of this year, and now Michael Schiavo is back in the public eye. He has formed a PAC, that is a political action committee, intended to defeat the religious right. He presents himself as a reluctant cultural warrior, but now he says because of the fact that politicians entered this fray seeking to intervene in his effort to remove his wife's feeding tube, he's going to form this political action committee. Now, you're going to love this. It's called Terri PAC for his late wife. His hope is to raise money to defeat politicians who tried to intervene in the legal battle between himself and his in-laws, Terry's parents, Bob and Mary Schindler. Wherever I can do, I'm going to do. Whatever I can do, I'm going to do, said Schiavo, who works as a nurse in the Pinellas County Jail in Clearwater, Florida. He plans to shift his work week so that he can free himself up with his PAC to try to go after the politicians who opposed his effort. You know, there is incredible audacity in the midst of all this. This is one of the ugliest pictures, not only of the culture of death winning in the end with Terry's death, but of Michael Schiavo's determination to see his wife killed because he said she would not want to live in a diminished state of brain capacity. This is even as her parents were quite willing to undertake all of her care and to take care of all of her needs so that he would be obligated to nothing. We've been also following this issue out of California. When you talk about what's going on in the relationships between states, public universities, and Christian schools, nothing, I think, is more important than what's going on in California, where the regents of the University of California have told a Southern California Christian high school that it must change its courses if they are to count towards the admissions requirements for the University of California system. The Calvary Chapel schools in Southern California have been told that they must shift textbooks because of their content, their religious content. Now the university is trying to back off and say it's really not about the religious content, but their own letters and advisories to the school beg the question. Now it's also been revealed that the students from these schools score higher on the scores concerning scientific knowledge than those from the secular curriculum. You would think that would be good enough, at least proof positive, that it's not about what they know that the University of California is really concerned about. It's about what they believe. We're going to follow this, and that's another topic for our upcoming conversation. But today we're going to be talking about Brokeback Mountain and what it means for America. I'll be right back.
Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowards.
Well, at least a lot of mamas be concerned for their babies to grow up to be this kind of cowboy. You're talking about Brokeback Mountain, Ang Lee's new film released today in L.A., New York City, and San Francisco. And it is the first major American movie to feature a homosexual relationship with homosexual sex between two men as its major feature. And we wouldn't be talking about it today if it were not getting so much attention. It's already being talked about as a must nomination for an Oscar. And these two actors and the movie they represent have now been all over the covers of major news magazines, entertainment magazines, and all the rest. It's Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal, who are the lead actors here, both of them kind of outside their normal casting. Let me just give you the reality of this story. It's about two cowhands, cowboys, who are involved in this case in taking care of sheep, who end up on a cold night in a pup tent, and they end up engaging in homosexual sex. There's just no other way to put it. And it's depicted in the movie. And out of that grows a homosexual relationship. Now, both of these guys get married, and the story is really awful. Annie Proulx wrote this as a short story published in The New Yorker. The title of it is Brokeback Mountain, and it is a tragic, tragic tale in more ways than one. But, I can't believe that actually this has been made into a major motion picture. The story is, for one thing, not only grotesque, it's also just incredibly depressing. I mean, both these guys get married, but they're still in love with each other. Their marriages fall apart. They go through horrible trials. Their wives understand that something is horribly wrong. One of them gets married to his high school sweetheart, and they end up with two daughters. The other gets married to a female rodeo star, and they have a son. And eventually these guys get back together for regular, well, let's put it the way the New York Times put it, fishing trips in which there is no fishing. I'll leave the rest to you. But you won't have any question when you see the movie. Now, let me tell you right up front, I haven't seen the movie. We're talking about the movie. Yesterday, I talked about the Chronicles of Narnia, having seen it. I'm not interested in talking about cinematography today. We don't have to see this film to know what it's about, because, after all, the movie is telling us what it's all about, and the media is telling us the story, and in more detail, frankly, than most of us would need. But there are other things going on here. Let me tell you that, World Magazine is a leading Christian news magazine. I'm a correspondent for the magazine. I believe in what they're doing. They have a wonderful weblog, and they provide a lot of information in terms of media reviews, entertainment, film, books, and all the rest. But there was a review of this movie that was put up by Jared Wilson on their website, which is entitled World Views. And this is what this young reviewer, Mr. Wilson, said. He said, and I quote, "For all of our modern cultural enlightenment, and despite the pervasiveness of gay characters and stories all over American media, and regardless of the success of shows like Will and Grace, etc., by and large, Americans, blue state and red state, Christian and non-Christian, innately find homosexuality repulsive." He says it's part of our makeup, it's biological, it's conscience-born, it's part of the imago Dei, it's part of a moral aesthetic most everyone bears latent. To be blunt, we know, and I'm not going to say exactly what he says here, I'll just say homosexual sex is gross, and we especially know that the particular sex presented in this movie is repulsive, even for most of those who have no basis for which to call it a sin, they find the act itself gross. Now, what's interesting is the response to this, and we're talking about page after page of response. I printed out, at last count, 54 pages of responses to just one. That's just one trail at the website for World Magazine on this. And people are saying the most amazing things. Jared, he's writing to the reviewer, Jared here, he says, have you ever thought about the yuck factor that gays have to put up with in all those straight movies? We're just as repulsed by that as you are by gay sex. Showing a man and a woman kissing or holding hands is disturbing and upsetting to gay people. Yet we put up with it in 99.9% of the movies without complaining. And then you have an argument that is made here by Joe Carter. Revulsion is not an argument, but in the face of such deep-rooted disgust, the onus should be on the advocates of change to make their argument for ignoring our gut instinct. Now, we've talked about this idea of the yuck factor. That's what's really going on here. What Leon Cass, a former chairman of the President's Council on Bioethics, calls the wisdom of repugnance. And I suggested there is a true knowledge there. And yet, I have consistently argued that the yuck factor is a woefully inadequate moral guide. And that's because the yuck factor is just another way, or rather crudely, of putting what we would call moral conscience and the instincts of that conscience. And yet, in Romans chapter 2, the Apostle Paul tells us that just like every other part of us is corrupted by sin, so also is our conscience, and that's why we can't trust it. The yuck factor is an important key, but it has to be checked by Scripture. And let me tell you why. Let's just take one example. Nazi Germany. The Nazis considered homosexuality repulsive, but they by the thousands, cauterized their consciences so that they didn't find the genocide of Jews and of gypsies and of homosexuals, mainly Jews, as repulsive. Now, that tells me that you can get over the wisdom of repugnance. You can deny that innate knowledge, and you can corrupt your conscience to the point that the yuck factor is no longer yucky, for lack of a better way of putting it. And I think that's the big issue here. You see, I think the real significance of this movie is that by presenting homosexuality and homosexual sex on the big screen so blatantly, it is an effort to alter, to transform the American conscience, individual by individual, viewer by viewer, to change normal, such that the conscience is no longer so prone to respond, yuck, no longer inclined to respond with the wisdom of repugnance. You know, the reality is we can get over these things. We can lie to ourselves. We can become morally insensitized and desensitized to these things. And the next thing you know, what once brought about the yuck factor and repugnance starts to look, if not acceptable, then at least somewhat normal, non-objectionable. Here's the big question I want to throw out for our discussion today. Have we reached the point in this country where we are ready to take a homosexual relationship between two men, in this case, two cowhands, and this is situated back in the early 1960s, two cowhands in Wyoming. Are we ready to take that and then to represent that as a romance or a romantic relationship, a bond of intimacy that is worthy of our aspiration, of our appreciation, even of our celebration in the context of the cinema? Have we reached that point? If not, why not? Are we the problem, or is this movie the problem? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to have a very responsible discussion here. We're not going to focus on exactly what's depicted on the screen. We'll let others talk about that. It's enough to say that it clearly presents homosexual sex in a homosexual relationship between two cowboys that endures for a number of years, destroys their lives, largely with their families and their wives, brings great heartbreak. But nonetheless, in Ang Lee's film and in Annie Proulx's short story, Brokeback Mountain, is presented as a relationship to be admired and to be appreciated. If anything, the thrust of the movie seems to be that it's society in its own sickness and repressiveness and repugnance that is the problem. And if the society had not been so warped by homophobia and resistance to homosexual relationships and homosexual sex, these men would have been free to have just lived their lives supposedly happily together, engaging in homosexual sex and somehow uniting in a homosexual relationship. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Is the yuck factor, is the wisdom of repugnance enough? Is the problem the movie? Or are we the problem? 877-893-8255 is the number, coast to coast. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Brokeback Mountain, the film version of Annie Proulx's short story, is making it to the movie screens today, released at midnight last night, showing in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New York City. Now, let me just make one point of comparison. Those are three cities. I don't know how many screens in those cities, but you're only talking about three metropolitan areas in the United States where this film, which is officially an independent film, is being released. Meanwhile, the same day, The Chronicles of Narnia is being released, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, on 3,000 screens nationwide. Now, I must say, there's a lot of good press attention and all the rest having to do with the Chronicles of Narnia movie. But what about Brokeback Mountain? It's all over the place. And it's only going to be shown in three cities? That tells you something of the cultural agenda that's going on here. Let's go to Pete calling from Mansfield, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Pete, what do you make of all this? Okay, Pete lost his voice there. Let's go to Tim calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Tim, it's your turn.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Mohler. I really appreciate your program. Just wanted to mention I have a brother-in-law who's been in the homosexual lifestyle, been a part of real pro-homosexual political groups for the last 25 years at least, and he's emotionally bankrupt. I mean, the misguided, the misportrayal that the relationships last that long and are even any bit edifying is, I think, just not meeting with reality. Other than that, it's just of course gross to most of us.
Okay, Tim, I want to go with your last statement there for just a moment. Are we right to see it as gross? You see, that's the big controversy. Let me tell you, the L.A. Times, in its glowing review that was released this morning, a review by Kenneth Turan, said this: instead of emphasizing its apartness, Brokeback Mountain insists it, that is, the relationship between these two cowboys, is a romance just like any other, and that makes all the difference. Does it make the difference to you?
Oh, you'd have to teach children from a young age that this is okay, because inherently I have three young boys, and they find it very repulsive, just the idea of two men loving each other.
Yeah, certainly in terms of romance and sex, yeah. You know, that's the difference. You know, you can certainly understand two men coming to love each other in a brotherly way. You can understand two men coming to love each other in a way that, for instance, relationships are forged on the battlefield or in another situation. But they aren't eroticized. They aren't sexualized. They aren't homosexual. They aren't romantic. You know, and that's what makes this, that's what I think makes this movie culturally significant, is because it is a very clear mechanism for normalizing homosexuality and homosexual sex. And, you know, Tim, I appreciate what you had to say. Three young boys, they have that innate knowledge. And, but of course they also have you as a dad, to tell them, what you believe on the basis of God's word is the right ordering of our sexuality. And, you see, I think that's really important, because this is what I think. This is what I'm absolutely confident is the agenda here. It is breaking down that yuck factor, breaking down that natural resistance. That's the agenda. You look at the advertising, you look at the calls for same-sex marriage. Look, Michael Signorile, a major a gay activist in America, says, look, the call for gay marriage isn't about marriage. It's just about normalizing homosexuality, because marriage is the mechanism for normalizing homosexuality. I think this movie is another mechanism. Thanks for your call, Tim. We got Pete back. Pete in Mansfield, Ohio. Glad to have you back. Go right ahead.
I fully agree with you that that is normalizing slowly. If you look back into the 60s, when a lot of our TVs did not have nudity on stuff, it was not accepted then. Slowly it was brought in through the movies and to the TV, and now all that stuff's being accepted. And I firmly believe even, and I know you'll get some calls that says no, but there will be Christians that will go that way too, because it's being normalized slowly.
Yeah, and I appreciate the fact that you pointed to the desensitization that's going on here, because that can happen to any of us. You know, if you work, you know, for instance, someone was telling me this the other day. If you work in the garbage, you know, Phil, you get desensitized to seeing that. If you work in a bakery, you get desensitized to the smell of baking bread. You know, if whatever you're around and confronted with constantly no longer seems unusual, either positively or negatively. And I think that's the agenda going on here. Folks, I want you to join the conversation. Have we reached the point in America where we are ready to have a relationship like this with no question that it's a sexual act and sexual relationship here? Are we ready to have that presented in such a way that it's a relationship that Americans are supposed to admire? It gets right down to the basic moral question about homosexuality. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, a movie like this presents us with an incredible challenge. How are we going to talk about it with this culture? We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is a fascinating discussion. We're talking about Brokeback Mountain, the new Ang Lee movie. It is starring Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal. It's about two cowboys back in 1963 who, on a very cold night, in a very small tent, develop a homosexual relationship. Starts with sex, and it continues on through. It traces how this affects their marriages, great distress, and all the rest. But the bottom line of the movie is to present this as basically a romantic relationship that should be admired. I think this is a major cultural development. Even as the movie is just opening in three cities, New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, it's getting nationwide coverage. Just turn on the cable news networks, and you'll see exactly what we're talking about. Let's go to Jim calling from Sutherland, Nebraska, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Jim, your turn.
Well, I just driving along here, and you made your comment that it was opening in New York, L.A. and San Francisco. I guarantee you what, it isn't opening in Casper, Wyoming. Right now, all the cowboys in Casper, Wyoming are probably oiling up their rifles and looking for this producer.
Well, let's hope nothing quite that extreme, but Jim, you are certainly making the point that, and I know you meant that poetically, but we are, it is the point that this isn't opening in the heartland. This isn't opening even in cities like Cincinnati and St. Louis and Dallas, where there are sizable homosexual populations. But it will before long. I mean, if not this movie, then something very much like it. Because something of a cultural dam is breaking. And this normalization of homosexuality is finally getting down to a depiction of homosexual sex. You see, that's something that's been avoided for a very long time. It's been the thing that could not be discussed, the act that could not be portrayed. But that's over. And the fact that you have two very well-known young actors who have given themselves to this project, it tells you a whole lot, I think, about where we are. Jim, drive safely. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Matt calling from Wheatley, Kentucky, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Matt, your turn.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Miller. I just wanted to make the quick point is the frustrating part for me in our culture is that as my anticipation for Narnia is coming out of today, and been so looking forward to that and actually finished up reading the book again today before I go to see the movie, I've heard on several shows, and last night the show 11:30 at night on ABC, I can't think of the name of it.
Nightline,
thank you. They had a brief clip about that, and they used the word of Narnia at least, the word controversial, at least two or three times as they were discussing that. In all of the promotional materials I've heard and on different talk shows about the Brokeback Mountain, never have I heard the word controversial. And I think it is a direct reflection of what's going on in our culture, because when Ellen came out of the closet on TV, she was kicked off of TV for a brief time. But now that as they have continued to win in the culture, I believe, and now we see the progression of it, and it's not controversy, it is award-winning.
Matt, I think you're making a very important point here, especially as you look to the differentiation between these two movies. And let me make that point just a little bit further here. Let me kind of take what you said and apply it a little bit differently. You know, I don't want to engage in Christian paranoia on this program. It's not like they're all out to get us there's this great cultural conspiracy against Christians and Christianity. There is a secular vice being put on, and there are groups that are very blatant about this. But I will tell you this. It's okay. It's in bounds for the cultural elite and the media to treat Christianity as controversial. That's in bounds. That's in play. It's real clear. But, you know, when it comes to an issue so politically correct as homosexuality, I think they're afraid to use a word like controversial. Or even to use stronger words just to kind of talk about what's actually going on here. And I do think that's a double standard. I don't want to speak out of paranoia. I just want to make the observation that that right now it's easier to talk about Christians being controversial than two homosexual men having homosexual sex in this cinematic screen. Go to Marilyn, calling from Beechwood, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Marilyn, glad to have you. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I saw the preview of this movie a while back, and I do plan to see it. I feel that if a homosexual or a lesbian is such, they would give their right arm to be like everybody else. I don't like when people condemn them. It is something that cannot be helped. By the age of three, it's already they are what they are.
Yeah, and Marilyn, where do you come up with that, just honestly? I mean, why would you say that? And I was surprised you even came up with an age.
Homosexual?
No, where did you come up that with the fact that by age of three, that's determined?
I have read that. I have looked into this.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you, you need to read a lot further, because that scientific evidence is incredibly debatable. And certainly it's interesting that you bring that up, because, by the way, if it's genetic, then it would show up prenatally. You don't have to wait till age three. So, you know, all this is out there. I will tell you this. The claims that this is something that can't be changed, I will vehemently reject. The claim that it can be easily changed, I must also vehemently reject. Behavior can be easily changed, but this kind of sexual desire or erotic profile cannot be easily changed. And Marilyn, I want to thank you for this. You give me the opportunity to say to my fellow Christians that we must speak very, very carefully about those who are engaged in this struggle. But Marilyn, you know, there's another issue going on here. And that is, you know, when you say that that they would change it if they could, you seem to be saying that that homosexual sex is not as admirable as heterosexual sex, because otherwise, why would they want to change it? I think that's interesting in and of itself. You see, I think that's one step towards this kind of normalization we're talking about. And I think we'll see where we go from here. That's going to be an interesting question. Let's go to Kimberly, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Kimberly.
Hi, Mr. Moeller. I just wanted to let you know that I really believe that the cultural influence is, in fact, very strong, because my husband and I have four teenagers, and even though we believe that homosexuality is wrong and that we have tried to teach our children that and point out biblically why it's wrong, and not that we hate homosexuals or that we're homophobic or anything like that, just looking at it from a standpoint of how it's inappropriate or incorrect, they still believe that it's okay, just because they have been raised in a culture where they're inundated the normalization. And I really think that speaks for the huge impact of the culture, because even though we are explaining that it's wrong and why, they disagree with us just because it's in the culture and in their face every day.
Wow. You know, Kimberly, I think there are a lot of parents who, if they were honest, would have to say the very same thing. And I think that does recognize what's going on, why this conversation is important, and why this movie is culturally significant. I mean, what we're really talking about here is the normalization of homosexuality and homosexual sex. And we're talking about a culture that I think is really pretty ready to hear that. I mean, I think those of us who believe that is the wrong direction and are willing to say so, I don't know how many we are. I think there are a lot, most I would say, who think this is wrong and they don't want to see the society go that way. But the people willing to actually say that in this kind of culture, I think that's very different. Because the same culture that's influencing your teenagers is influencing a lot of adults as well. I'll be right back. This is Albert Moeller. Okay, let me tell you about some things I expected to hear in this program. And in 1 hour, you can only get in so much. But here's some things I expected to hear. I expected someone to say, look, this is Wyoming. And when our truck driver friend Jim called in from Nebraska and said, look, it's not showing here in the heartland, I expected someone to call up and say, well, that's because that's where Matthew Shepard was killed for being a homosexual. And that's where that kind of violence took place. Well, let's just come back and say that it is vitally important that Christians make absolutely certain, public, unquestionable, that there is no support whatsoever for violence against any person based upon any of this. And that just needs to be said. Because one of the things that could tragically be sparked as a as a reality by this film, something of a catalyst, would be some kind of backlash that would lead to violence. Absolutely wrong. That violates everything we believe as Christians. Now, something else could come out of this. Not only does this movie really provide an avenue for the normalization of homosexuality, it could provide an opportunity for Christians in conversation to say, look, here's why I'm opposed to homosexuality. Here's why I believe that the normalization of homosexuality is wrong. Here's why I believe this will be wrong for our society. And here's why I believe it will be wrong for the individuals involved. Now, a lot of things were said on the program today, and I wish we could trace all of them out for hours and hours. When Marilyn called and said if they could change it, they would. You know, she's making a statement that's controversial even among homosexuals. Some of them say, look, this is superior to heterosexual relationships, superior to homosexual love. There are others who say, yes, if I could change it, I would, but I can't change it. Well, you know, the reality of the gospel is that we can change almost everything. And I say almost because the gospel doesn't promise that that in this life, those who are paralyzed will be able to walk, or those who are blind will be able to see. Or those who are blonde will be able to change that, or those who are short will be able to be tall, or tall to be short. It does tell us that everything most important about us is utterly transformed. Behold, all things have become new. Now, we should never underestimate just how difficult this struggle is for people who are involved in the struggle with homosexuality. Christian love means that we must love them in this and love them through this. Love them even when they reject us. We have to be very clear that our Christian responsibility is to tell the truth and to back up the truth with ministries of compassion. And one of the most compassionate things we can do in the midst of this cultural controversy over Brokeback Mountain is say, look, just look at the movie itself in terms of the story. I'm not saying go to the movie, just look at the story. Look at the pain that comes into these lives. Look at the wreckage that comes into these families. It all goes back to what happened in that pup tent. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. It certainly isn't the last word on the subject. We'll be talking about this some more as this story develops coast to coast. We'll be back next week to talk about what really matters. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.